Hear me now? Oh, that's good. I'm a Sabre member since 2010. I have a background in criminal justice. Sabre to me is very much like criminal justice, enough to where we all investigate for the truth. This gentleman I'm going to talk about today, Sylvester Johnson, is a man that I believe did very much for Major League Baseball, and he kind of got a terrible reputation behind him that was partially true, but the other things that he had did in for the Major Leagues should erase that, take care of that, equal it out. This is a man that hit Ty Cobb with a baseball bat and got away with it. This is a man that helped create the baseball player pension fund. He's one of the first originators of it. This man broke Roger Hornsby's ankle. This man appeared in four World Series. This man wore 14 different baseball uniforms in his career. This man played organized ball for 46 years. He was involved with organized baseball. He also had five children, one with Down syndrome. He is known as the most unluckiest pitcher in the major leagues. I'm going to explain that he was unlucky in some ways, but in many ways was not. When I think of Sylvester, I think of this gentleman. If any of you recognize him from the 1946 film, It's a Wonderful Life, otherwise known as Clarence Oddbody, Angel Second Class. Sylvester Johnson touched many lives in the major leagues, the minor leagues, and in the movie, this angel convinces Jimmy Stewart's character, George Bailey, that you are important, you are needed, and it's amazing how many lives a man's life touches with other lives, which is true still. Sylvester touched many lives to where Sylvester Johnson did not exist, many things in the major leagues would have changed, and I will explain that. I started this crusade because of this 1933 book called Who's Who in Major League Baseball. This book was created by Harold Speed Johnson in 1933, based in Chicago, and he took photographs of each major league player in 1933, based in Chicago, for all the teams that visited American and National League that would come to Chicago to play the Cubs or the Sox. Their photograph was taken, just like Sylvester's is here, and the first line that describes Sylvester on page 232 is the unluckiest pitcher in the major leagues, which is, to me, is a very bold statement, a down statement, a statement that would haunt you if you were a player in the major leagues, especially in this book that was very well known. You're that guy, the most unluckiest pitcher in the majors. If he was so unlucky, why was he involved with organized ball for 46 years? You would kind of dump him. He's kind of a bad seed. I'll explain why. When I started my research on Sylvester Johnson, I first looked up this gentleman, found Eugene Converse Murdoch. He received the Sabre Salute in 1991. He traveled from 22 states, visited old-time ballplayers. 76 ballplayers were interviewed, including Sylvester Johnson. By accident, believe it or not, I'll explain that at the end. Eugene Murdoch audio-taped him, reel-to-reel, then was transferred to tape. I contacted Cleveland Public Library and was able to get a copy. They were kind enough to send it to my home. They trusted me with the original tape. I was able to restore it for them for a couple items that were missing and transferred onto other tapes of other players where it belonged on Sylvester's tape. The tape, you know, it's hard to transfer reel to reel. So after that, I had joined Sabre. Lyle Spatz, the organizer of the Sabre Biography Project, well, I was honored enough that he let me do Sylvester Johnson's, which is published in August 2011. He pitched 3 years semi-professional baseball, 18 seasons in the majors, 10 seasons in the minors, 3,501 innings pitched. He was hired as a scout for the New York Yankees for 8 years, hired as a scout for the Brooklyn LA Dodgers for 7 years. That is 46 years devoted to organized baseball with a wife and five kids in tow. Very difficult. Sylvester was born December 31st, 1900, as he liked to always brag and say, I was born on the last day of the month, the last day of the year, the last day of the century. A birthday you could not forget. He was born from Oscar and Caroline Johnson in Portland, Oregon, December 31st, 1900. Family originated in Iowa, Swedish descent, Norwegian heritage. He had two sisters and two brothers. His two sisters became seamstresses at an overall factory in Portland. His father was a sawyer for the Inman Poulsen Lumber Company, and he lost part of his right hand. His mother was home with the kids. His older brother Herman actually sold from the grocery cart in the streets of Portland. And Sylvester, when he was a younger man, dropped out of school, and he was a paper salesman for the Inman Poulsen Lumber Company. His brother Norman, according to the census, he was too young to be working at the time. Sylvester Johnson's hero was Walter Johnson, of course, who was also noted as Swedish descent as well. I had made contact with the Johnson children, Sylvester's kids, four of the five are which alive. I was able to speak with all of them, and the eldest one, my most important one, since her memories are the oldest, and I need them. Beverly was able to tell me that my father was not born with a middle name. He added the W later into his baseball career, which she is correct. When I contacted the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1921 for the 22 season, this was filled up by Sylvester, and you can see the blank in between his name. There was no W. The name was added. The W was added later by Sylvester himself. When Sil was younger, he played sandlot baseball, and he wanted to be a catcher, believe it or not. But a foul tip cracked him in the mouth and knocked out four teeth, breaking a lot of his other teeth. So Sylvester learned that time I'd rather play on the other side of home plate, and became a pitcher instead. He joined the United Artisans Semi-Pro Baseball League, which was known as the Advanced Junior Artisans, playing the local Portland sandlot teams. Earned some recognition. He was excited. This group was pretty powerful in Portland back then, very similar to the Masons fraternal organization. In 1917, World War I arrived. His brother Herman was taken away by war. The family wasn't able to give me an exact reason of death, other than it could have been most likely influenza, since that was a bad thing at the time. He died in San Francisco and was flown back to Portland for burial. He was involved, though. That is his draft card that I was able to get from the Oregon Census. When Sylvester played United Artisans ball, he collected so many scraps of his talent and collected them all. Many ones looking just like this from the Oregon newspaper. And he went running to Walter McCready, the manager of the Portland Beavers. It was owned by his uncle, W.W. McCready. And Sylvester ran over, showed all his scrapbook clippings there, begged and begged for a job, 19 years old, and finally Walter McCready agreed. Let him have a tryout, which he did well, and he hired him. But after spring training and a couple games, he thought Sylvester was a little wild, so he dismissed him in June 1920. Sent him over to the 1920 Vancouver Beavers with manager Bob Brown. In Canada. Bob Brown used him frequently. 190 innings were pitched by Sill, and a couple other teams were eyeballing Sill, saying we'd like to purchase him from Bob Brown. Walter McCready found out, jumped in, and grabbed Sylvester right back to Portland. Brought Sylvester back to Portland 1921. Sylvester pitched 304 innings and got a lot of recognition for that exceptional right arm that was fast. In 1921, Ballville Klepper bought the Portland Beavers. He was a Seattle Rainiers manager, or a president. He bought it, and Walter McCready stayed as manager of the team in 1922, and Sylvester was getting looked at by many major league teams. In fact, McCready respected Sylvester enough that he said, in 5 years, he'll be one of the greatest pitchers in the country. Just paste that prediction on the wall and see if I'm not right. These five gentlemen here, Clark Griffith, the president of Washington Senators, Frank Navin, president of the Detroit Tigers, Hugh Duffy, president of the Red Sox, Comiskey, head of the White Sox, and Bill Veeck, senior, head of the Cubs, all wanted Sylvester Johnson, offering big money. But it was Frank Navin that decided to put the most money out and purchase Sylvester Johnson and another Portland pitcher named Herman Collette. This was the biggest deal in 1921. The Tigers paid a fortune for them. $40,000 plus 8 players were involved just for these two pitchers from Portland. And he got to play for Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb was Sylvester's manager, and he worked as a nice manager right behind Sylvester's neck from center field. Before, though, Sylvester could play, Frank Nevin had to fix his teeth. $200 is what it cost for the Detroit Tigers to put the teeth back in Sil's mouth and clean them up before play. Like I said, everybody had mentioned Sylvester with the Walter Johnson always tagged with his name. In 1921, during spring training, Sylvester broke his wrist by the line drive that come right back to him from a player named Frank Dotson during the exhibition spring training game. But he was able to play. Ty Cobb did not fire him, no matter how mean Ty was or the reputation he had, he did keep him. On June 9th, 1922, Ty Cobb was tagged out in the first inning by a third baseman from the Philadelphia Athletics, Jimmy Dykes. He wasn't happy about it, so he gave Sylvester Johnson an order to hit Jimmy Dykes with a beanball, which is hard for a center field manager to do because you can't yell that out. So Ty Cobb had a signal where he'd rip grass out of the ground and start chewing on it, and that was a signal that went to the catcher, Johnny Bassler, who would then give the finger signal to Sil to hit Dykes in the head. It was the scariest moment in Sil's life because Jimmy Dykes went down bleeding, blood coming out of his ears and nose. Jimmy Dykes got up, though, cleaned himself up, and he was able to play in the end of the game. Sylvester got married in 1922, October 8th, to his sweetheart from Portland, Ruth Helen Heitzman. 1923, he stayed with the Tigers. April 9, 1923, in Birmingham, Alabama, spring training, Cobb was hit on the leg with a bat which flew from Sylvester Johnson's hands in batting practice and was hobbling around for a couple of days. The meanest man in baseball still kept Sil around. On May 18, 1923, Sylvester Johnson, on the interview that I had with Eugene Converse Murdoch, he mentioned a story about Howard Emke, which was a fellow pitcher with Sylvester in 1922, which Cobb got rid of for 1923 and gave him to the Red Sox. Well, MP finally had his boss up to bat, his old boss up to bat, and he decided to throw a ball right at his head. Ty Cobb didn't like that. He said, "Did you steal it? Did you mean that?" And MP said, "Yeah, I did." Right outside the clubhouse, Ty Cobb waited for him, got him, and banged his head off the concrete, took Sil and the rest of the boys to pull him off. Howard Emke was pretty important because a few years later he created a company here in Philadelphia known as the Emke Manufacturing Company that makes baseball tarps. 1923, Sylvester hits his first major league home run at Chi Park, but then strains his arm later on and he's out for the rest of the season. 1924, he kind of stays injury free but had tonsils taken out and a bad bout of bronchitis. May 29, 1925 was an important day in Sylvester's life because this is the day he got knocked from the American League into the National League. Bid Falk was a player for the Chicago White Sox. In fact, she was Joe Jackson's replacement after the 1919 fix. Left fielder hit a line drive, got Sylvester Johnson right in the face, knocked him out. 8 fractures to his face. Bid Falk was called Jockey. He didn't really care much that he hit Sil. The ball rolled back and Sil was credited with an assist since the ball bounced off his face. Everybody was talking about Sylvester being hurt. In fact, the judge, Kennesaw Mountain Landis from Chicago, came and visited Sylvester at Mercy Hospital in Chicago. The umpire of the game, Brett Dolan, came to visit him. And he was put back together by one of the innovators of invasive surgery, Dr. Philip H. Kreuscher, who was the White Sox physician. In 1925, he got traded to the Vernon Tigers since his vision was quite off after that hit. 3 wins, 17 losses. But believe it or not, the St. Louis Cardinals were interested in him still. Charlie Barrett and Charles Chapman, both the scouts from St. Louis, wanted to give him a chance. This is where Sylvester was being touted as bad luck, bad luck. $7,500 draft price. They still took him. He got to play for Rogers Hornsby. He was excited. On May 5th, bad luck came right away because Wally Pitt broke his toe with a line drive. And then in September 26, his catching teammate, his battery mate, Bob O'Farrell, hit a line drive during batting practice and broke the top of Sill's hand. Sill could not participate in the 1926 World Series, but Roger Hornsby promised him, if you can't do anything more for the rest of the year, you might as well go home. He said, I guarantee you if you win the pennant, anything that anybody gets, you get two. I got the World Series check, Sylvester said. And he got $5,500 and was able to pay off his first house. Sill made it in the picture, even though he wasn't present during the World Series. He helped get him there. But in 1926, they saw unlucky Sill. They sent him away to the Syracuse Stars. Sylvester went. He gets into another accident as soon as he arrives for spring training and runs into a wall in left field, going after a pitch over a pop fly. Broke his ankle, broke his shoulder. Newspaper misprinted that Walter Johnson was going to play the Buffalo Bisons minor league team. The team was pretty freaked out because they thought Walter Johnson himself was coming to play. It was really Sylvester Johnson, the new addition to the Syracuse Stars. So, Sylvester got the last laugh anyway. On July 31st, he had a no-hitter against the Buffalo Bisons, and everybody in Syracuse was excited for Johnson. On September 12th, they had Sylvester Johnson Day and collected $225 from the stands for him because St. Louis wanted him back. 1928, he now has a daughter, Beverly, and his wife, Ruth, are living in St. Louis with him. He meets Jimmy Wilson, a new catcher from Philadelphia, is now joined on the Cardinals squad. Jimmy Wilson becomes close with Sylvester over his years with St. Louis. Flint Rem one day was too drunk. Sylvester recalled the story, too drunk for Flint to pitch, to where he got very upset, went to the groundskeeper's place to dig a hole for himself in the mound, because when he was throwing to the catcher during the game, it was going over the catcher's head. So he actually dig a hole and pitched from a hole in the mound. Sylvester makes his debut in the 1928 World Series. 29, he does well too, 182 innings pitched. Breaks Roger Hornsby's ankle on May 30th, 1930 during a Cubs-St. Louis Cardinals game. Sylvester's blocking third base and crashes right into Roger Hornsby, his old boss. 1930, Sill pitches good again. He also recalled the story of Grover Alexander, old Pete, having epilepsy, and that he assisted by keeping Grover Alexander's tongue from being swallowed by the recommendation of Doc Weaver, the team physician for the St. Louis Cardinals. September 23rd, 1931, Gabby Street explains that Sylvester Johnson has poison ivy. Unlucky still. In 1931, October 5th, there's an argument about the World Series. And one man killed another man for bragging about Sylvester Johnson. The police report looked very similar to this. It was the man who was killed was Gustav Johnson. Cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head. John Leonard was the suspect. There was also another man arrested named Michael Grillo for violation of the Volstead Act. It was pretty big news, made all the newspapers in New York, that Sylvester Johnson, you know, the guy had pretty much said, quit talking about that, Sweet Johnson, I don't want to hear it anymore. And the guy said, you know, why don't you make me? And he punched him, knocked him in the jaw, and then his head hit a marble table. This is the Ben Franklin Hotel here in Philadelphia. And when that fight was taking place, Gabby Street actually flipped a coin talking about who was going to pitch in the World Series. The coin landed on head where Burley Grimes pitched Sylvester's tails. 1931 was the lowest ERA in Sylvester's career, 186 innings pitched for St. Louis. Dizzy Dean was a good family friend that Beverly remembered, bought Beverly her first corsage, Sylvester's daughter. January 23rd, they were going to sell Sylvester to the miners, but that didn't work out. Branch Rickey was getting investigated by Kennesaw Mountain Landis for hiding a good player. So they decided that Sylvester Johnson would be kept on the Cardinals for 1933. But then Sill had to make room for Dizzy Dean and a new pitcher, Tex Carlton. The Giants even wanted a piece of Sylvester Johnson. We were talking about trading Mel Ott, but that didn't happen. In 1934, Jimmy Wilson actually takes over the Philadelphia Phillies as manager. Sylvester Johnson gets tossed to the Cincinnati Reds with Bob O'Farrell, another catcher from St. Louis. May 4th, 1934, Chick Hafey for the Cincinnati Reds accidentally hits foul tip, hits the umpire in the throat, Ernie Quigley is injured. Sylvester Johnson and Otto Miller from the Brooklyn Dodgers are called in to umpire the game, which they called out their own teams throughout the rest of the game. On May 15, 1984, is a rainy day in friendship. Jimmy Wilson bumps into Bob O'Farrell since the game's rained out over there at Causey Field and talks to Larry McPhail about taking Sylvester Johnson back with him to Philadelphia, which he did. And Sylvester even said, "Ah, get out of here. I just got hired by the Reds. You can't just take me." He said, "Yeah, you're coming with me to Philadelphia." And he did. That's the way it was done. No agents, no contracts, no nothing. Just, I want him, and that's it. Jerry Nugent, the Philadelphia's president, agreed to it by telegram. Beverly was there with Sylvester. She remembered just Cincinnati long enough for her to catch the measles and lose them. So that's how short their trip was in Cincinnati. I have to take question and answer now. I'm pretty much out of time. Any questions and answers? Sylvester Johnson ended up pitching for the Phillies until 1940. From 1934 to 1940, he pitched. And actually ended up pitching black baseball, too, for pitching to Cool Papa Bell. I actually talked to this author, William F. McNeil. He actually was hit by another line drive by Len Konecki. Hit him, and Konecki was killed 75 days later by an airplane pilot. Konecki was drunk on a plane and was killed by a fire extinguisher to the head. Phil Johnson ended up getting internal hemorrhages later on. There's him and his son, 1936. He was named coach of the Philadelphia Phillies from 37, 38, 39, and 40. This is him talking about the player pension fund, which was shot down and turned down because the umpires just got it. We're not going to give it to players, too. He pitched a batting practice pitcher in the 1938 All-Star game. Dolph Camilli was a good friend of the family as well, lived in the Philadelphia apartment complex, and every time he hit a home run, he would get cases of Wheaties, and he would send it to the Johnson family back in Philadelphia, and the kids really hated Wheaties. Jimmy Wilson quits, and Doc Prothro becomes boss of the Phillies, and he works with Sylvester. In 1939, Sylvester does get a pitch in the Hall of Fame game. He gets, he's falling apart pretty much with internal hemorrhages. Also has a couple more children. He gets hit by another line drive by Bill Swish Nicholson in Chicago. Hits him. And Sylvester wants to stay in the game, believe it or not. His pitching record was very decent, especially for his age. They still kept him around. He ended up playing for the Seattle Rainiers, working for Bill Skiff. But even in Seattle, bad luck came when he broke his own arm throwing a pitch. Broke his own elbow. World War II come and go. He stays. He's too old to go now. Sylvester stays with his family, stays with the Rainiers. His own son becomes bat boy for the Seattle Rainiers in 1944. His son ends up growing up, though, quickly, too, and he ends up playing ball. Sylvester becomes manager of the Vancouver Capilanos, and he stays there for about a month, doesn't really like the job. Bill Skiff gets fired from the Rainiers. Johnson quits 11 days later, too, because they both end up going to the Yankees as scouts. So I think a lot of it was who he knew, the friends that he made, that he kind of followed. And was accepted. 1947, the player pension fund finally gets accepted by Happy Chandler and Larry McPhail. Sills' idea was back in 38, was shot down. And even they printed something about that, that Sill, even though he had 18 seasons in the big show, he doesn't get a dollar's worth of recognition in the player pension fund since all before 1947. Sill missed it. He ended up working for Reynolds Wrap, and he, on the off season of scouting, also worked for Lord's Construction Company out in Portland. He signed a player named Vincent Pesky, which I was able to talk to on the phone. Real nice guy. Still alive today. Just talked to him a couple weeks ago. He was the brother of Johnny Pesky, the Hall of Famer that most everybody knows. Sylvester Johnson liked Vince and picked him up. Vince didn't stay long into baseball, though. He was also respected by Charlie Metro. He also signed another player named Dan Garza, who pitched for was a player for the New York Yanks football team, which Sill had signed. As long as Garza agreed to it, if you send me to dental school, which he did. Dan Garza became a very prominent Portland dentist. His son ended up pitching ball while his dad owned a Gresham berry farm in Gresham, Oregon. And he ended up going to several different old-timer games, signed Bob Martin for the New York Yankees, and Kent Happy for the New York Yankees as well. I'm afraid my time's up. I wish I could keep going.
What was his final MLB record?
As far as his...
wins and losses.
I don't have that with me. I know that it was, I think it was 112 and 138, I believe it was. Sylvester Johnson died 1985, February 20th, 3 years to that day. His buddy Bob O'Farrell died, the one that broke his hand.
Why do you think he was lucky?
I think he was lucky because they kept him around. If you're so unlucky, then why do we keep this guy around? Even in his late 30s, he was known as Old Sill, you know. And he was respected enough, though a lot of people liked him. He never said much. I don't think he talked much because as a child, he kind of earned that reputation. He kind of kept his mouth shut, I think, hiding his teeth. He was missing Sill teeth. He looked like a checkerboard grin, so.
All right, Matthew, thank you very much.